be with all of you again on a Sunday. I'm just so grateful to be here. My name is Johnny Contini, and I have the privilege of being the campus pastor here at Crossbridge Brickell. And I'm so grateful for these new lights that we have because I can actually see your faces. And I don't know what it is, but did you guys actually lose weight over the Thanksgiving break? I mean, you guys just look fantastic. Just jawline and waistline looking sharp. I mean, I need to go over your house for Thanksgiving next year. So, hey, fun fact about me. I love Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is my absolute favorite holiday. And I don't know. I know that Christmas, it gets all of the attention because of the gifts, the lights, the music. And I know that Halloween has the spookiness factor, the creative costumes, and the candy surplus. But for me, Thanksgiving just takes the cake. There's just something about friends and family gathered around the table to share a meal, to play some football or watch the Macy's Day Parade that makes your heart feel full and happy. But I think more than the activities that come with the day, I love the reason behind the celebration. I love that we set aside an entire day where we consider all of the ways that we have been blessed, and then in turn we express gratitude towards those blessings. And, you know, in the spirit of gratitude and in the spirit of Thanksgiving, as we come off a great holiday weekend, I feel like I would be remiss if I didn't stand on the stage tonight and express how grateful I am for you. I mean, I love you. I can't say it enough. I love getting to know you. I love doing church with you. I'm grateful for our pastor who leads us with boldness and courage. This is just an incredible community to be a part of. And if this is your first time here tonight, we are so honored that you're here. Please stick six. I promise you, you're going to love this place. But tonight, I want to just have a little bit of a great conversation with you when it comes to gratitude. Because, you know, if you're new here, or if this is your first time with us at Crossbridge, for the past 3 weeks, we've been in a sermon series called Gospel Legacy. Gospel Legacy. And the leadership of this church believes that this series is actually pivotal to the life of our church. You know, we've been using this series in a different way, but the reason why it's pivotal is because this year we celebrated 15 years of being a church family. 15 years. That's 15 years of doing gospel-centered work throughout Miami-Dade County and beyond. And one of the ways that we've been using this series is to talk about vision, just to remind the people who have committed themselves to helping us build this church who we are, what the mission is that we're signing up for, and to inspire you towards that vision. We also have used this series to celebrate just all the ways that God has been faithful to us in the past 15 years. I mean, it's just story after story of God's goodness, his faithfulness, his healing and provision. And while it's good to aim for high goals and it's good to go towards the destination, it's also equally as important that we celebrate the wins along the way. And then lastly, we've been using this series to just look ahead of where we believe God is going to take us in the new year. Because like I said, this is a pivotal time for our church, and the decisions that we make next year, the pace at which we run the vision, it's going to determine the next 15 years of ministry for us here in our city. And that's exciting. You know, I have to say, the reason we're doing this series, the main reason behind it, is because we want you to know that you know that you know that when we talk about building the church, what we're not talking about is building a brand. We're not talking about building a brand. We're not even talking about building a building, a program, a platform, or even a personality for a pastor. What we're talking about is building a people who are formed and shaped into the image of God and who've committed themselves together, are sacrificing with one another and giving generously of their time, talent, and treasure to fuel this movement forward so that we can build a gospel legacy. Now, you might be asking yourself, gospel legacy, what is that? Why? I've never really heard of that before. Why would you want to do that? And I would say those are fair questions. And the way that I would answer those questions is I think that if we are honest with ourselves, there's something that's just deep inside every single one of us that desires for our life to live on after we're long gone. We're searching for purpose, for meaning, and for significance, especially when it comes to the work that we do. I mean, have you ever found yourself at your job and you're in your car, or you're at your desk, or you're on the Zoom? I don't know what it is that you do for work, but have you ever found yourself just sitting there and you're wondering yourself, man, does any of this even matter? Is what I'm doing, what I'm putting my hands on, what I'm investing my time, my effort, my energy into, does it really make a difference in the grand scheme of things? It's only natural that we would want to leave something behind that makes a positive impact in the world. And it's because we want our lives to count. We want our lives to have meaning. We want, if I could say it this way, we want to leave a legacy. And so for the past 15 years, our church has been proclaiming the gospel message, and we have been inviting anyone who has ears to hear to be a part of the grand narrative that God is writing here in our city and to experience this transformative power. Because like Carter said a couple weeks ago, the gospel really is transformative. It has the power to transform you as a person, to transform your community, to transform your city, to transform the world. Because the gospel is the power of God. The gospel is the power of God. And if history has shown us anything, it's proven that the gospel has this unique way of transforming people's lives and turning the world upside down. I mean, over 2,000 years, this gospel message has been heralded to the four corners of the world, ushering in the kingdom of heaven, transforming people from every nation, tribe, and tongue. And despite the attempts of the powers that be in eradicating this movement off the face of the earth, the gospel has proven to be more resilient, outlasting, and outpacing any form of persecution, because Jesus himself said that the gates of hell will not prevail against his church. That's what you and I are being invited into. That's what we get to be a part of. And so for the past 3 weeks, Pastor Carter has stood on the stage and he has just given some insightful messages on what it means to build a gospel legacy and how to propel this movement forward. And I don't have the time to get into the details of it all right now. You can always check them out on our YouTube page whenever it suits you. But the messages and the points that he's communicating are twofold. The first is who we are, who we want to be in terms of our identity as a church. Because it's really important that we understand who we are in a movement. We need to know what we believe, what we stand for. And then the second part of this is we're learning through these messages what we're aiming towards, the direction in which we're going. So identity and direction. And it's a joy. It's a really fun time, actually, to be part of Crossbridge and to be a leader in Crossbridge. And one of the fun ways of being a leader is you get to learn how to dance this delicate dance of inspiring people, casting vision, and encouraging them to mobilize their gifts and talents to build the church. And yet, we also have to take time and realize that it's vitally important for us to appreciate and express our gratitude to you guys, because for the past 15 years, God has just done some incredible works in and through you. And if anything, what we hope to be the fuel for this movement is that it would be gratitude. Because for the past 15 years, it's just been God's grace upon grace upon grace that we're able to survive. Now, if you have your Bible with you this evening, would you do me a favor and open it to Psalm 23? Psalm 23, it's going to be in the middle of the Bible, and if you don't have your Bible with you, that's okay. I'm going to make sure to have the words right on the screen behind me, but Psalm 23 is probably one of the most well-known, most recognized, most recited passages in all of the Bible. I mean, even if you don't come from a church background, you're likely to have seen or heard this passage at some point. And if you do come from a church background, you definitely have this on like a t-shirt, a bookmark, or a coffee mug at your home. But this is a powerful passage. And in preparing for this message, I know some of you came up to me and you told me that you read this passage every single day. You read it every day because it brings encouragement, hope, and comfort to your lives. And so tonight, when it comes to this passage, I just kind of want to share a little bit on gratitude. Because gratitude, or this feeling of being thankful, it's something that every single person in this room can relate to, right? I mean, Gratitude, it doesn't discriminate against age, what country you're from, your socioeconomic upbringing. It's a feeling that we all get when good things happen to us. And I guess the question that I really want to explore tonight is, what happens when good things don't happen to you? What happens when bad things happen? What happens when bad things happen to you over and over and over again? You see, here's what I know. I know, according to God's word, that God has designed each and every single one of us uniquely. And because we're uniquely designed, we have different gifts and talents, which means we have different dreams and desires. But unfortunately, we live in a broken and fallen world. And because of that, when our dreams and desires aren't met, we face pain and disappointment. And when pain and disappointment comes to the forefront, it's only natural that we would feel like something is missing in our lives. It's only natural that we would start to look to something to fill the void, to alleviate the pain, to soothe us and distract us from what's really going on. I don't know, I just feel like this is especially true around the holiday season. I don't know if any of you guys feel the same thing, but I just feel like the holidays have this unique way of advertising themselves as the most wonderful time of the year. And yet simultaneously, it unintentionally, it like brings to the surface people's conflicts, tensions, and problems. Anyone else feel that? No, just me, just my family? Oh, okay, that's cool. No, but it's true. I feel like we do have a lot of conflict around this season, and we do things to try to distract us from being grateful. I mean, does anyone else find it utterly ironic that the day right after Thanksgiving is Black Friday? I mean, here we are. We have this whole day set aside for us to count our blessings and to be grateful for what we already have. And not but 24 hours later, we're caught up in one of the most expensive spending frenzies in America. And here's just some fun facts for you. Did you know that last year, Americans spent $9.12 billion on Black Friday alone? $9.12 billion. And that was just us getting warmed up. After the holiday season, we had collectively spent $936.3 billion. And if that's not the worst of it, here it is. 36% of our population, that's just a little over a third of our country, went into debt by at least $1,500 just to fund holiday presents. It's wild, right? Again, we have this day set aside to be grateful, but we find ourselves getting sucked into this never-ending cycle, this never-ending loop of being consumed with wanting, needing, 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 and it leaves us feeling empty and dissatisfied. So, what are we to do? What are we to do with this problem? Because it is a problem, right? And look, I'm not coming down on anyone. I need this for myself. I need to know, where do I go when I feel like something is missing? When bad things come my way, when I feel like I don't have enough, where do I turn to for gratitude? I think Psalm 23 has a lot of insight on how we can answer these questions. Now, Psalm 23, it's a famous, famous passage. And it's probably, like I said, one of the best literary pieces in the world. And because it's so familiar and because it's so well recognized, we might have this tendency to think that it just kind of like burst onto the scene. And we don't really give consideration to why it was written. But the reality of this passage is that it was wrung out of the life of David. I mean, you know David. David, the boy who killed Goliath. The boy who was pulled from the pasture, anointed king, and became the most famous king in Israel's history. This is an incredible man of God. And it's important to realize that before David was a shepherd, or a king, he was a shepherd. Before he was a king, he was a shepherd. And this is an important detail because in the Bible, one of the central metaphors for us being able to understand who God is and our relationship with God is that of a shepherd, the shepherd of the sheep. And the Bible, I don't know if you know this or not, but it refers to human beings as sheep a little over 400 times. And it refers to Jesus as the shepherd, or God as the shepherd, a little over 100 times in the Bible. So it's a key metaphor for us being able to understand the relationship of who God is and who we are to God. And I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but when the Bible refers to us as sheep, it's actually an insult. And it's because if you know anything about sheep, you know that they're not smart animals. In fact, they're really, really dumb. I mean, this isn't firsthand information that I'm working with, but in all my research and studying and preparing for this, it was just commentary after commentary that sheep are dumb animals. And I was listening to a message by the late Tim Keller, and in the sermon, he read a letter from a man named Douglas MacMillan, who is a pastor in the United Kingdom, and he's also a real-life shepherd. And when Douglas was asked about sheep and to explain what sheep are like, this is what he wrote. Check this out. He said, "Sheep, they continuously lose their direction as cats, dogs, and other animals do not. In addition, they are extremely obstinate," meaning they're very stubborn animals. "Even when you find a lost sheep, it's difficult to round them up and bring them home unless you have a dog to scare them. The sheep rushes to and fro, and when you find it, you must seize it, cast it down, tie its legs together, and put it over your shoulders to carry it home." And finally, he says this, "Sheep are not at all the clean, cuddly creatures they appear to be at a distance. On the contrary, they are subject to nasty pests and need to be regularly thrown into strong chemicals to rid them of lice, ticks, and worms." Congratulations. This is the metaphor to understanding human beings in the Bible. you can see why it's an insult, right? And look, it's supposed to be an insult. I mean, if you know anything about the characteristics of a sheep, it's that they are utterly helpless and they are utterly foolish animals. And you know, this is church. This is a safe space, right? I mean, can't we all admit that we've said and done foolish things? If you've done or said a foolish thing to someone or yourself, could you just raise your hand real quick? Just, yeah, like all of us. I mean, this is a level playing field right now. And it doesn't matter how much we think we've progressed in life, until we take our last breath, chances are we are not done saying or doing foolish things. This is a problem that has plagued humanity ever since sin entered into the world. And if we could have fixed it, we would have done it by now, but we can't because we are utterly helpless to do so. We can't do it on our own. It's why we need a shepherd. You know, scholars, they believe that David wrote this passage, Psalm 23, when he was running for his life. Either when he was running from his life from King Saul before he became king, or when he was running for his life from his son Absalom, who tried to stage a coup towards the later end of his kingdom years. And it's wild because everything was going so well for David. I mean, here he was, the shepherd who became king, and not just any king, but a national hero. He led his country to a golden age, and he was putting them on the map as a military superpower. But everything starts to fall apart. I mean, here he is. He's forcibly separated from his family, and he's running for his life. His wife has left him for someone else. He lost a child during childbirth. His family is just completely unraveling. His daughter was sexually abused by her brother. Another of his sons killed that son. And now he is the victim of a deliberate and vicious smear campaign that's labeling him as a traitor and a troublemaker for his country, even though he has proven time and time again that he is willing to die for them. And despite all of David's failures, his failure as a husband, his failure as a father, his failure as a king, as a leader, David focuses his attention, he centers his heart, and he pens this passage saying that the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, and my cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. You can see why this passage is so beloved, because it's just full of rich imagery that paints God as this beautiful, loving, caring shepherd. And if you and I, if we're going to cultivate gratitude in life, especially when times are tough, it's going to start with us understanding what David understood, that it's not about what the shepherd can do for us. It's about who the shepherd is. It's not about what the shepherd can do for us. It's about who the shepherd is. If you would look with me in verse 1, David says that the Lord is my shepherd. Not his friends, not his parents, not even the person that he admires the most in the world, the Lord. And because of this, he says, I shall not want. Now, I love what Pastor J.D. Greer says about this word want. Pastor J.D. Greer, he pastors Summit Church in North Carolina. But he says that this word want, it's the equivalent to, it's not him talking about desire, right? He's not talking about our desires, our dreams. What he's doing is, it's an old English way of saying being in need. I don't want anything. David says that the Lord is his shepherd, therefore he lacks nothing. I just want to ask you, can you say that right now? Can you say that you don't need anything in your life to change? There are no problems, there's no issues that you can't face on your own that will make you feel happy, satisfied, and at peace? I mean, I don't think anyone really could. I mean, this is wild. David is saying that this is a God whose presence is able to fill and satisfy. And we might be like, what's up with this guy? I mean, no one just has problem-free lives, right? We all have hang-ups. We all have problems. We all have pain. But I just want to remind you that David is not going through life problem-free. I mean, if anything, he is at rock bottom. He has heartaches and challenges. His nation has turned on him. His family is falling apart. And yet he is able to still drop this just bomb of a line that says, I shall not want. How? How can he say that? Why can he say that? And here it is. It's the key to really just understanding this passage. It's because the Lord is his shepherd. It's the very identity of God himself. The Lord is my shepherd, and he is right by my side. And just that on its own means I lack nothing. How powerful is that? Let's keep reading because it gets even better. He says, he makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. You know, growing up, when I used to read this passage, my mind, it would see the word pasture and waters, and it would conjure up these images of like luscious fields that would go on for miles and miles and miles, kind of like the one right here, right? I mean, it's just so beautiful. It's picturesque and serene. And what's funny is that this isn't exactly the type of landscape that David would be roaming during that time. I mean, he is in the Middle East. He's in a desert climate. His green pastures probably looked more like this. Just patches of vegetation scattered throughout the desert. And I'm not saying that, you know, David didn't mean the rolling hills and the luscious fields carpeted with grass. But what's really interesting is that these scattered vegetation and just quiet waters, they kind of tell a different story. And that story is that God isn't promising you and me just endless feasts where we can stuff ourselves silly and never have to worry about eating again. What he's promising is he's promising bread for the day and water for the evening. He's revealing to us a relationship where we fully trust in him and he will provide for our every need. It's just like the Israelites in the desert. It's God promising us our daily bread. And then there's this other part of the verse where he says, he makes me lie down in green pastures. And I just want to ask you, why would a sheep want to lay down? I mean, let alone in a pasture, what would make them want to do that? The only reason why a sheep would lie down is because it's full. It's fully satisfied to the point where it has no craving to keep eating and it's just able to rest. This is so beautiful. David is saying that he is experiencing the same kind of fullness in the presence of his shepherd. That even when he's in the presence of what others would deem as food, he feels no need to indulge because the Lord is satisfying enough. His soul is satisfied in the Lord. And I think some of us, and look, myself included, we just think, hey, maybe if I got that job, or maybe if I found the right person to do life with, or if I got my kids in order, or if maybe if my parents would just get along, then I would be happy. And what I'm not saying is that it wouldn't make you happy. I'm not saying those are even bad things to want. What I am saying, though, is that all of those things have an expiration date on their happiness. And so it's the Lord's presence that never expires. And David is encouraging us to just dwell in his presence. He continues, he says, he leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Again, when I used to read this verse, my interpretation of this line was primarily spiritual. I interpreted it as God leads me towards righteous living. And that's true. That's not at all what the passage is not trying to communicate. But there is another layer to it. Because David's not just talking about the spiritual concept of what it means to live a righteous life. He's also drawing upon a physical landmark. Can we show that next photo? This is what paths of righteousness would have looked like in David's landscape. They are these little pathways carved out into the hillside amongst jagged rocks and steep cliffs. And amidst these rocks, you can see that there are these like just well-trodden lines showing that people have walked paths of safety. And what's even more fascinating is this. When a shepherd would lead his sheep on these paths, the sheep hardly ever look to the shepherd. They don't really look up. Why? Because there's vegetation. There's those pastures that are along the path, and they're grazing, unconcerned and unbothered. And they're not worried about falling off a cliff. They're not worried about tripping up. They feel totally secured, and they just rest and follow the shepherd's voice. David, he's encouraging you and me to listen to the shepherd's voice, because the reality is we all know what it's like to fall off the path, right? To fall off the path that leads to flourishing, that leads to life. I mean, it's like that old hymn says, prone to wander, Lord, I feel it, prone to leave the God I love. And we've already admitted, we say things and we do things that are foolish. And I really do believe that we all want to be good. We all want to do good in this life, but the reality is we're just far better at making messes than we are at cleaning them up or keeping them clean. And it's why you can see it, the pathway, it's narrow. It's like finding a needle in the haystack. And you might ask yourself, how did the pathway get there in the first place? Well, it got there because someone with diligence, patience, and perseverance walked it back and forth. Back and forth, picking up sharp rocks and ragged edges so that there would be a pathway to safety. David's saying that the Lord in his loving kindness creates paths of safety for you and me to walk on so that we will not get hurt. Not because we did anything, but because he is a good shepherd. That's why it's for his name's sake. David continues, and I love this next verse. He says, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You see, David knew and understood the shepherd's perspective because he was a shepherd. He understood that when you take sheep to a valley, that the sheep could get very scared. They could get really timid, and they would need someone to walk alongside them so that they could get to the other side. But David also knows what it's like to need a shepherd, that in the dark days of his life, he needs the shepherd's wisdom, guidance, and the ability to have comfort for him to be able to make it through. You see, what we need to do is we need to pay attention to what David is saying in these verses, because I think it can encourage us and assure us of what it means to find comfort when we go through valleys of our own, because the source of his comfort is the Lord being with him. Valleys, they have this weird way of fostering fear and uncertainty, and we all face them. I mean, there's the valley of depression. There's the valley of illness, the valley of rejection, the valley of divorce, the valley of infertility, the valley of mental illness. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And they're not something that we want to tread alone. And when they seem long and never ending, we should remind ourselves that the Lord is with us, and therefore we have nothing to fear. And notice that David says, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, walking meaning that he's using this as a way of denoting movement and progress. He's not saying that we should move into the valley, buy a house, and live there forever. No, valleys, they're conduits. They have an entrance and an exit. They have a beginning and an end. And what David is encouraging us is that in those passageways, that if we ever feel like we're going to wander, the Lord is going to protect us. He also says that we walk through it. And notice that he says walk, because it's not that even though we soar over the valley of the shadow of death, it's not that we would run through the valley of the shadow of death, it's that we would walk through the valley of the shadow of death. Because true strength is being able to walk through life's problems, life's pains, life's valleys, knowing that God is going to carry us through. And he has this interesting line. He says that your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Your rod and staff comfort me. Now, I find this so interesting because as a shepherd guides the sheep along the mountains, the shepherd, they rely on their rod and staff because sheep are prone to wander off. And they use these tools to help bring the sheep back into their care and provision. However, when David's using this language, he's not just reflecting on his own personal experience as a shepherd. He's also invoking the collective memory of his people. For the Jewish community, stories from Scripture aren't merely history. They're deeply ingrained in their identity. If you can recall the Exodus story, for instance, it's not a tale in the distant past. It's every Jewish person's story. It's likely that David was recalling a time when he and his people were subject to a different kind of rod and staff. The rod and staff that he might have been referring to is the image of Pharaoh. Pharaoh had this rod and staff, and it was widespread propaganda for the Jewish people. They were tools of abuse used to punish subjects into submission. However, the central theme of the Exodus story is not that Pharaoh is God, it's that the Lord is God. God doesn't wield these tools to harm or punish his people. And David is emphasizing that the rod and staff are sources of comfort. You know, if I learned this about sheep, that if a sheep wanders off too often, the shepherd, in his kindness, will go to the sheep and break its legs and then put the sheep on its back and nurse it to health. And then after it's been nursed to health, the sheep will never leave the shepherd's side. I think that's so cool. I mean, I don't want my legs broken, but I think it's so cool that a sheep would trust the shepherd, knowing that the shepherd has their best interest at heart. And for some of you, man, this might have been a hard year. You might have found yourself in some situations that you didn't necessarily think you would be there. But sometimes God's most loving thing that he can do for us is he allows us to have our legs broken. It's so that we would learn to depend on him and that we would never leave his side. And so whenever you question where God is in your life, I just want to encourage you to remind yourself that God is not Pharaoh. You have a God who loves you, who comforts you, leads you, and desires to care for and protect you. Even in moments that may feel uncomfortable or challenging, it's not the abuse of a Pharaoh, but it's the love of a shepherd. Your shepherd is with you. I'm going to say that again. Your shepherd is with you, especially in the rough moments. And then he goes on to this next passage, which it's amazing. He says, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. This is the point in the passage where we see David move from the shepherd to the king. And what do you do at a table? You eat. You fellowship with one another. And David is saying, in the middle of everything that is going wrong in my life, I sit down with my God and I am fully satisfied and at peace. I want to ask, I mean, if you are faced in front of an enemy, is your natural instinct to dwell in the presence of God? Is it to have fellowship with him, knowing that he is your peace? I think most of us would say it's fight or flight. You know, I'm a little bit of both. But David is reminding us that true peace, it's found in the in having fellowship with his shepherd. And that's why he is able to dine and not worry. And he goes on, he says, you anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. Even in the midst of fear and worry, he has so much peace and joy that he has to share it with others. This is unbelievable because in a time of fear and trial, David has joy and peace and comfort enough to share with everyone. And I love watching people who go through suffering and they just have this ability to like worship through the pain. They're not ignoring the problem, but they're able to know that there is peace knowing that God has already overcome everything. That's what it's like. And oil, by the way, throughout Scripture, oil represents the Spirit of God. David is talking about a fullness of soul that comes from fellowship with the Spirit. How amazing is that? And finally, David ends the passage with this powerful, powerful line. He says, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. This is one of the only times we see David commanding his soul in the passage. Everything else has been about the provision and the care of the shepherd, but this is David's response to the shepherd's care and provision. And when he says, I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever, David isn't talking about some heavenly mansion. He's talking about people. You see, during that time, house referred to a group of people, like the house of Jacob or the house of Judah. David is saying, my natural response to the goodness of my shepherd is I will dwell amongst his people. And what is that follows him? It's goodness. It's mercy. He's saying, I can't get away from goodness and mercy. It's always behind me. It's always following me, haunting me. That's literally what the word means in Hebrew. Creating beauty and blessing in the wake of my misery and mess. Because the shepherd follows him. And that's just what he does. That's why you should always rejoice when somebody around you is being blessed. When you see somebody being blessed, it means that God is in the neighborhood. He's always just there to give good things, good gifts for those he loves. And according to Psalm 23, he also follows us bringing beauty and blessing from our experience he has had, and that is beyond this world. And it's just amazing to think of all the ways that God can bless us. That's why I'm so thankful for Jesus. I'm so thankful for his church. When we gather, it's a powerful reminder that our true joy, our true peace, our true contentment is found in the presence of God. You know, each and every week, we try to get on the stage as pastors, and we tell you the mission of our church. And that mission is we try to help you connect the way of life to Jesus. And there's a deep meaning behind that. And that meaning is found in John 10:10. Jesus says in this verse that the thief comes to steal, to kill, and destroy. But I have come to give you life and life to the full. This is a powerful statement. It's the kind of statement that says, if you're seeking to be connected with God, if you crave a life of fullness, if you're searching for salvation, deliverance, freedom, or the flow of living water, the source of that is all found in Christ. powerful. He says, I have come that they might have life and life to the full. I just let that sink in. It should encourage our hearts. It should encourage us because it reframes our thinking. It means that every command in the Bible, every rule, every guardrail, every thou shall and thou shall not is God's way of leading us down paths of righteousness. It's his way of pointing us to joy. It's his way of saying, hey, this way to life, this way to life to the full. And you might be asking, well, how is he going to give us life? Well, if you read a couple of verses later, he says, Jesus puts it this way. He says, he who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. There's something incredible in these words, almost too marvelous to fully grasp. And I just want to point out a couple of things. Jesus, what he's doing is he's making it clear that he is no hired hand. He's not just casually watching over his sheep. No, it's with great angst and ownership that he longs and watches after them. Because when Christ looks at us, those of us who are Christians, what he does is he sees something that belongs to him. In fact, he boldly declares in this text that when the wolf comes, he won't flee. He won't abandon us. In the face of the snarling, bloody evil that is represented by the wolf, the shepherd stands firm because he's not a hired hand. We are his, and he says, my own, hear my voice. And so what does he do? He lays down his life. It's wild to think that at our worst, Christ died for us. It's wild to think that when evil and when death comes our way, the whole mission of God, his love for you, was to break the teeth of the wolf and snatch you out of its grasp. He laid down his life. That's the beauty of the Good Shepherd. And so how are we to cultivate gratitude in the midst of bad things? It's quite simple. Hard in practice, but simple. It's to remind yourself of the Good Shepherd, that God is for you. He is never going to leave you nor forsake you. He loves you, and he's always with you. Even as you walk through the valley of the shadow of death, you don't have to fear, for he is right by your side. Would you bow your heads and pray with me?